canine detection collaborative, a detection dog training trio with Stacey Barnett.
Hi.
Robin Grubel.
Hey there.
And Crystal Wing.
What's up?
With humor and a big dose of theory, our trio talks practical training advice and features interviews with top trainers and scientists.
It's Canine Detection Collaborative!
Welcome back to the Canine Detection Collaborative. This is Crystal Wing, and I am here with Stacey Barnett.
Hello.
And I'm actually here with Robin Grubel.
Hi.
Because I'm one of the Wayward Dog Trainers, and so I'm in her basement in the room next door as we talk about boundaries.
So yes. We had
a nice discussion on boundaries last time, and we were just going and going, and we thought, oh my gosh, we didn't make it through the whole list that we wanted to get through last time, just with boundaries with other people. And we're still going to go ahead and switch gears a little, and we want to talk about boundaries with dogs. And there's so many areas that can go. I am curious though, Robin, last time you talked about how you blocked out the me time. How is that going? How is that boundary setting?
Actually, that time, it's going pretty good. Crystal, you're a little sneaky because we have such good conversations that sometimes the me time doesn't work really well. But probably the best me time I've blocked off is from 8 to noon, practically every day I have blocked off for dog training.
It's been wonderful.
What is that like?
It's fantastic. And actually, we ended up doing a little kind of Zen thing today. Imagine that, coming off of the 2 conversations with Jens Frank.
He inspired us.
He did. One, to be dutiful, it was raining horribly. And so we did train in the garage, but that's okay. But the other one was really starting to talk through a progression plan for what I wanted to accomplish with the dogs today. And I trained this morning with the help from Crystal and one of the interns, Julia. I trained 7.5 dogs today.
Wow. The half, was that the front half or the back half?
That was Ray, who's 13, who came out and did like a couple hops just because she wanted to, right? So she got to jump up on her climb on cue, and she thought it was fantastic.
That's so great.
Made my heart so happy.
Yeah, she was just like, oh, we get to do the thing. So that was, we really started breaking down. Okay, nope, 3 in a row, move, shift a criteria. 3 in a row, shift a criteria. And so be able to pick up almost exactly the next training session with every single dog as to where we're going to be at. And the fun little thing is, little Miss Flash at 6.5 months old is like, I'm keeping up with the big dogs.
Yes, she is.
So it's just kind of fun. So it's going quite well.
And you haven't been staying up super late.
Have not. We had the discussion before Crystal even showed up this summer, because last summer we started doing the whole, oh, let's stay up till 11:30 at night talking about dog training. And then,
because I'm a night owl, so that's when I'm out in my van by myself thinking about dog training.
Oh, well, you know what? I'm coming real soon, and I'm a night owl.
Yay!
In the morning, so I don't sleep. So Crystal and I can talk dog training.
You guys can talk dog training. I go to bed at 9.
I'm sitting here going, I need to get out of this like training slump, because like you're talking about like,
it's not even dark at 9.
You're talking about like goals and stuff. And I'm like,
Well, we can't wait to get you here. We'll get you all kinds of goals rolling.
Yeah, no kidding. So the 9 o'clock bedtime thing has been working. It doesn't work so well during seminars.
Wait, you can go to sleep at 9? At
yes.
night?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, she goes to bed. Yeah, she goes to bed at 9.
I know.
What? I know. And I've been trying to be so respectful of that, because that is not how I live.
How is that even physically possible?
Oh, it's possible. Trust me, because my brain...
I'm kind of like gobsmacked. Like, that's the only word I can think of right now.
I'm a morning person.
So am I.
Yeah, but no, I need my 8 hours.
Wow. I wish I could. Yeah, you know what? I can't physically do it.
I need my 8 hours.
But I love that you guys set your boundaries for that. I do wish, Stacey, you could get more sleep. That's a goal, but
that would be okay.
I literally don't think I can sleep longer than that.
Yeah.
Or that. It, yeah. Yeah. I'm just.
That's where you are.
Well, hang out and talk dog training, and then I'll get my fix, and then I'll be, you know.
So boundaries, we're kind of touching on what we talked about last time. And this time we wanted to talk more about boundaries with our dogs, like dogs to dogs and dogs in our house, and how boundaries with us and our dogs can help make our lives better. But you know where I always go with it. If I want to learn something, what do? I think of the opposite. So help me understand what the opposite of boundaries would be. How do you perceive that?
Chaos.
Chaos?
Yes.
Okay.
Chaos is the opposite of boundaries.
And
mosh pit. Mosh pit. I'm picturing a mosh pit.
And unpredictability.
Yeah.
For me. And I think of with my dogs, if I did not have boundaries for them,
bloodshed.
We would be miserable. There would be bloodshed, my blood, their blood. I would be so frustrated.
Yeah, that'd be bad.
Yeah, it's the predictability and seamlessness that boundaries give you with your dogs is incredibly important. It also alleviates a lot of my stress. And I'm thinking about, you know, taking my dogs out in public.
Mm-hmm.
And how I let the public even interact with my dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they don't get to interact with my dogs.
I know. I'm picturing like you let the public interact with your dogs, like question mark.
No, I do not. And because they don't need to.
Yeah, no.
But what do you do? So I get that question a lot. If someone comes up and says, can I pet your dog? Or even worse, someone just runs up to pet your dog.
No, they're working.
Do you like body block them if they're just going for it?
Absolutely. I will body block them. I will...
Right into the Walmart aisle.
I do.
Look, preferably you have something on underneath it if you do that.
Actually, I was walking through... It was really, really funny. Actually, this past week, I was walking through a big box store with Flash. And Flash wanted to go say hi to everybody.
Yeah.
And what I actually started doing is I started talking to her, but loud enough so that the other people could hear me.
Yeah.
And it was like, nope, they don't want to say hi to you. Guess what? They don't want to say hi to you. You don't get to say hi to them either.
Dropping it in.
Yeah. And so it's this whole, and people started thinking that was really funny. That I was actually, but it was done in this nice little happy dog training voice.
Uh-huh.
So Flash was like, oh, mom's talking to me. I get to be all sort of reinforced for my mom. And I'm like, nope, they don't want to talk to you because you're not being very good right now.
Or if they really push the envelope, you just haven't recovered from that fungus on your head. Just like, you know, you don't want to spread that around.
I haven't quite done that yet.
I'm having a little bit of fun with the picture in my head.
But what you said, though, I mean, I think people like to anthropomorphize our dogs. That, you know, it's, and so that is a great way of handling it because they do start to look at them as this little human. And I love that technique. I do that a lot of the time, too. I also do that with hiking. So on trails and such. So, you know, someone else is coming up and I'm like, oh, look at that pretty dog. So I'm indicating to my dog, because I've practiced this, mm-hmm. that yes, I know this person's coming. We don't need to worry about that because I have suspicious bitey dogs. And so I'm letting them know that it's okay. And I can say hi and I can go, oh, aren't they pretty? We should go over here so you can't say hi. And so again, it's the same thing. So yeah, it's kind of a universal way of handling it. I love it.
Right. Well, and when I do have people who want to say hi, and especially at the really young puppy stage when it's important for the whole people aren't scary thing. Typically by then, my dogs have so much reinforcement history from me that even about 16 weeks to 5 months old, somebody's like, hey, can I feed your puppy a cookie? I'm like, here's the cookies before I even allow them to say hi to the dog. The rules are you may only pet them or feed them if all four feet are on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And I would strongly encourage you to kneel down to feed them cookies. And then I will take 3 steps back. And they usually get about 2 cookies in before the puppy's like, where's my mom? You suck.
You're way braver than I am because I'm like, no Joe Public. Nope. And that's where the trader cards come in.
Well, I have labs.
Yeah. But even with labs, like I just don't want, and Nancy, she is really like key on this. She's like, nope, anytime my dog is on leash, you do not get to go see people. You do not get to see other dogs. I don't want to have to anytime that I'm out. I don't want you to think that's even a possibility. Because then you get the dog that's pulling to the people and pulling to the dogs. And then you also get the people that just, it doesn't matter how many instructions you give them. They, a lot of times they know more than I do. They need to push my dog's butt down because my dog needs to sit.
Yeah. They feel the need to train your dog.
Yeah. And I just don't have the need or desire to punch anybody today or any day. So, because that's my boundary for my dog. Because if you go to touch or do something to my dog that I'm not comfortable, I know that I'm going to react and I don't want to set my dog up in that situation.
That happened. It just was reminding me when Joey, so long ago, right? Because I mean, I lost him last year at 14 and a half. He was like an older puppy. And I think I was at I was having a garage sale at on my front yard or something. And there was somebody who was like a kind of a friend, but she was more of a cat person. Like she wasn't a dog person and she didn't really know how to interact with dogs, but I guess she saw on some TV show what you should do if dogs jump up on you. So he jumped up to like say hi and I didn't have a chance to like control it, right? And she literally grabbed an older puppy, grabbed both of his front feet and squeezed really hard until he cried. And before I could even like stop her. And he actually became like reactive over that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. He was like, oh, people are scary at that point. And it was this horrible learning experience that you just don't know how Joe Public is going to interact with your dog. And then,
mm-hmm.
I mean, more recently, I mean, Powder, when she was a puppy, like she was razor sharp with those teeth. I've never felt anything.
Oh yeah. Shark bait teeth.
And they were like, and my puppies have like the last three puppies, I could like grade them based off of like sharpness, like razor, like ouch. It was almost aversive to pet my puppy. She was that bitey. And I had this one woman at a trial who was like insisting that her little child pet my puppy. And I'm like, no. And she got mad at me. And I'm like, she is going to draw blood and I don't want that from my puppy. It was really a very awkward, I mean, it was an awkward conversation too, is just a telling her like, no, I'm sorry.
And then you go walking through someplace with a dog like Nico and nobody wants to approach you anyway, which is always kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, see, she was a little yellow lab puppy.
Yeah. The whole difference in mentality when you have a pointier dog versus a lot of the times versus a floppy.
I don't know. Checkmate and Yukon, they get a lot of attention. I mean, anywhere I would go.
Yeah, but yellow. But if they were yellow and floppy, man.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be way more. But I mean, just still though, I mean, I can't believe. I mean, I've had kids come up from behind and grab Checkmate. Like a big bear hug from behind. And I was like, you have got to be kidding me.
I apologize to all of the parents out there, but kids are not the brightest tools in the box.
Keep your kids on leash. I mean,
Oh, you can get hate mail over that one.
I bring it.
Cool teacher.
I needed a leash.
That's one of the things that actually scares me the most about doing some of the contract work that I do. Is the fact that out of nowhere, a small child could come running up to my dog and surprise them.
Yeah.
And the dog's going to be like, hey, what are you doing? And the first thing that happens is who gets in trouble is the dog.
Oh, yeah. The dog and then you.
Yeah. So I totally agree on being the hyper vigilant. I mean, walking through an amusement park, things have gotten better.
There's no kids at an amusement park either, are there?
Because people are actually starting to teach the kids, no, they're working. You can't pet the dogs.
Whoa.
Which is wonderful. But it's still, I still get questions quite a few times. Can I pet your dog? No, they're working.
Okay. I have to give you two quick stories. Nancy, her German Shepherd, he is a don't touch me dog. I mean, just he's that. He's a whatever. So we go for hikes and usually I will take Yukon, who is the, hi everybody, I love you all. You know, I want to lean on you and get all the snuggles. So we usually set it up in a situation that Yukon is the one that goes and says hi to people because it's not going to hurt him. And I mean, people have fallen on him and he's just like, oh, hi. Huh. I mean, like the Girl Scout that tripped over him, you know, and it was like, ah, and he still was like, oh, I'm sorry, that happened to you. So he's that dog. In the meantime, she has been, and her boundaries are very clear. In fact, she has a harness that has, I think, at least three different patches on each side that says, nope, nada, not happening, never.
That's awesome.
She just had all these different variations of no. Like, I don't know what it's going to take to have you understand that no, you're not touching my dog and he doesn't want to be touched. So then my second story, she told me not to share this, but I'm sharing it because he's gone. And what are you going to do?
We love you, Nancy.
of course. Right.
Yeah. So this is making fun of myself. We're at the local park and it has like a little lake and we're going around. And my deal was Quinn always had this, can I bite him? Can I bite him? Can I bite him? That was always his question with everybody he saw. And so he always had to have a job. Stay at my side. We're walking together. This is a nice, fun walk. And he's like, can I bite him? Can I bite him? No, we still can't. We're just walking. So the deal was if we ever stopped somewhere and someone said, can I pet your dog? I would look at him and say, do you want to say hi? And sometimes he would, and he would go over and he would lean on him. They could scratch him and he'd come right back to me. But that was a deal I made with him. That was our contract. That was us setting boundaries. Well, we're at the lake the one day and Nancy's going to the bathroom with her dog and I'm holding another dog, I think. And this lady comes up and she's like, oh my gosh, I have dogs. Older lady, I love dogs. I've had them my whole life. And I love the big dogs. I'm like, oh, nice. And she said, can I pet your dog? I was like, okay, let me ask him. And she was like, oh, that's so lovely. I love it. I was like, Quinn, do you want to say hi? And he's like, okay. He comes over and what does she do? She leans really fast over him to give him a kiss on the head or something. I don't know. He bops her, like nose punches her right in the mouth. Bloodies her lip immediately, like busts her lip. And it wasn't teeth. I mean, it was 100%. He did not open his mouth, but he was like, I'm setting my boundary. You don't do that to me. And Nancy walked out right as it happens. And the lady like grabs her mouth and kind of flexes back. And I was like, nice to meet you. Goodbye. And we just took off. But that was one of those moments.
That was good. You didn't bite her. Good job.
Yeah, I was. I was like, what a good boy. You should have bit her face off, but you didn't. And that was stupid on my part. But again, like those boundaries are so important. Yes, I let him choose to say hi, but Joe Public, dude, I just can't. And I was in a bad situation because it was really busy there. I had two dogs. That was really stupid on my part. I should have just done my normal and said, no, I've got my hands full. Simple.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, she just sold me. She's like, I love dogs. I've had big, you know, the whole story. You know how it goes.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
It's amazing. I start thinking about this for Nico. Well, Moses, my old Pima dog, actually, to a certain point, he loved the PR stuff. He's like, let me go say hi to everybody. Let me do the whole thing. But you know what? At about an age of 7, I started seeing the I'm over it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. And so I wouldn't push him to do a lot of that stuff anymore. And then I have Nico and Nico's like, yeah. And just no, he's not a PR dog. That is not his temperament. He's like, let me go find dead guys. That's all I want to do. Or I want to play tug.
Honey Badger's your PR.
Honey Badger's PR. Dash is pretty good at it, but he got flooded at an event.
Oh.
As like a 1.5 to 2 year old. And now he's like, nope, people don't need to talk to me. And it's fascinating for me to even walk with them through some of the events that we do. Cause they're like, yep, I'm here. I'm doing a job. I'm not jumping on people. I'm not soliciting attention. I'm not doing any of the things. We're just walking and sniffing. That's all we're doing.
Wow.
And it's hard for people to understand that. For me, boundaries on my dog are, I don't randomly run up to people's kids and start hugging their kids. Why are you doing it to my dog?
Oh, you get like arrested or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I know that I could be in jail for that stuff.
Yeah.
That is weird.
That's weird.
Not going to advise. And it's a cultural thing too, for sure. I mean, even with locations of being rural versus urban, I mean, it's so different in the expectations of our dogs too. And I hear all the stories of, you know, the stories of Europe where friends have gone over there with their dogs and they're like, it is so different. We don't have to deal with everybody wanting to mug our dogs. It's just, we all just go together. I'm like, oh, it would be so wonderful. I would love that. My dog is not their property.
The other thing that is the downside to not having the boundaries is, besides like safety and all that, is degradation of your training.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. Yes.
Because if you don't have, and not even just boundaries with other people, but just even boundaries in your house and like stuff that you're doing and how you manage your dog, like if your dog doesn't have any kind of rules, like that's just going to bleed over into your training. And all of a sudden, your criteria on everything else is going to slip.
But that's all based on your comfort level too, I think. I think with most boundaries, we have to kind of define our priorities.
Yeah.
Because my dogs don't have the best manners. Like if you come to my house.
No, I'm not saying my dogs have great manners. There are certain things I have boundaries around that.
No, I agree. I'm just kind of making sure that it's said that my dogs don't have great manners. Like,
oh yeah. And if anybody met my dogs, I'd be like, what?
Yeah. I mean, I live by myself. You know, I'm like, whatever. Other stuff's more important to work on and train, but that's where you have to define your priorities. Like some people are comfortable with the bathroom door open while you're showering and peeing and everybody's walking around. And that's not a comfort level for me, you know? So
I live alone. So, I mean,
I'm saying like, if you had a household full of people, you know?
Yeah. People. No. That's weird.
And so, well, no, I mean like families and such, there's lots of comfort levels. And I'm not saying it's weird. I'm just saying it's not my comfort level.
It would be weird for me.
Yeah.
My comfort. Yeah.
So you have to just think, you know, is it comfortable for me to have my dog jump on me or jump on counters or do different things? And then do I want them? Here's the part that gets me frustrated is when the dog will do something. And if you don't set that boundary and you don't stick to it, it's not their fault. If they don't have the boundary and they do the thing, and then all of a sudden it's like, why do they jump on everybody? Or why do they do this or that? It's like, it's not their fault, because how do they know? And then also, how do they know they crossed a line if you didn't set it in the first place?
Yeah. Or part-time boundaries. You know that like those people that have part-time boundaries, right? Where like, well, they're saying, no, it's not okay now, but then it's okay later, but now it's not okay again.
What you allow is what you get.
Exactly.
You're teaching the people and the dogs how to treat you.
And the other thing is that sometimes means anytime.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So if you sometimes allow them to flash, I'm having the problem at the moment because I was very, very inconsistent in the fact that, oh, look, she's putting her feet up here. Well, now she can put her feet all the way up on the counter and lick the countertops.
Okay, so that's a boundary I have not been very good at setting.
No, that boundary, and I'm looking at her going,
yeah, that's when I haven't been good.
This is a whole bunch of really bad training. So unfortunately now, she ends up in the crate during dinner time, but I'm also keeping her from rehearsing the behavior when I don't have the bandwidth to actually train it. So for me, that setting a boundary, it kind of stinks that she can't be out with us during meal times, but it also keeps me from getting mad and yelling at her.
Yeah, it's management.
Wouldn't you know, she likes to run in her crate because she usually gets a chewy or a cookie when she runs in there. So she thinks it's a fantastic place.
Like the biggest boundary that I train with my dogs is going outdoors specifically. Indoors is going in a door is a little different for me, but going out a door is a non-starter. Like you...
No bolting.
Like zero bolting, especially because I camp so much, right?
Right.
Those trailer doors do not operate very... They're slam locks. And it's so easy to... If you don't have those boundaries, just all of a sudden let loose the horde. So it's just like, for me, like that's a big one, because it's also impulse control. And with my girls, like if I don't have impulse control, like I would be sunk.
Right.
Like because I think it bleeds over also into the other stuff that you're doing. Right. So just even like container skills, like a box smashing type of deal. Right. If you don't have impulse control in other aspects of their life, but you expect them to have impulse control over, you know, not destroying a box or even just a distraction, a container, I think it can be tough.
That takes me to Mondio. I had for a long time, I was just, we get to the gate and I open the gate and I let them run into the yard.
Yeah.
Well, now at trial, we open the gate and it's off leash and we have to be under control. And how many times have I rehearsed that we get to the backyard gate and I just say free for all go? So, oh my gosh, that bit me in the butt. So now even the back door, everything has to be consistent. Every threshold, it needs to be that we wait. I can open the door and now I can release you by your name. And also there's all that arousal stuff that happens at the door. So if I don't have things in their mouth and maybe somebody flies to the door and then they drop their toy, I don't want the other dog going until I say something, because now I can say, Yukon, fill your face. And then I can say, Radish, go. And now I know that I'm okay. And they can go run around and be idiots. But it's even that, the bursting through the door, I have to be thoughtful about. And so it's about that consistency piece, like you said.
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually a big game of mine. I love doing the stay games with my backsliders and just having fun with it, pushing it in all different kinds of directions and making a game out of it. You know, it's like we think of boundaries as something like, oh, God, that's boring. Like, I don't want to train boundaries. If you can make a game out of it, stays on making a game.
Well, and I love so we were talking about just trying to kind of come up with some ideas and thoughts of, you know, kind of how to get my brain around this. And one of the things I asked what the opposite of boundaries was, and Nancy had said that she asked, well, is it freedom? You know, this lack of freedom. And it was interesting because really when we got talking about it, boundaries gives more freedom.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Because she was a Montessori teacher and she said that one of the things they do was they call it a prepared environment. And so if the kids came in and the environment is prepared, well, they had the choice of what they wanted to do and they wouldn't make wrong choices because there wasn't anything wrong to do. So they could have the freedom to do what they want, but is that little bit of thought in advance? So even like my backyard, I have an obstacle course in the backyard. I have 3 different dig areas, but I've set boundaries. You can only dig in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, well, UConn is still learning the boundary of not jumping on the house. I think we've got that established now. There's enrichment things for them to do so they can't be wrong. And so that's something I think we're always trying to be thoughtful of, is just having that prepared environment. I like that phrasing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Coming from the Montessori world.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think when you do have that prepared environment, you are giving them more freedom. And I think sometimes that can be a little deceptive, you know, like a fence or a kennel or a tetherboard actually can give my dog more freedom
mm-hmm.
because it can keep them safe, like we talked about before, but it also can give them a place to be able to run and do the things, you know, where maybe they wouldn't have been able to before. They've been on a leash the whole time. I don't know. I just kind of twisted my brain a little bit.
Yeah. No, that's, yeah.
And the tether board was a game changer for me. Have you guys ever used those?
I haven't.
No.
I saw you were using with Radish and it was awesome.
Yeah. I posted on my CDK9 page. That was something that Susan taught me. And that was just such a game changer. It's just a board and it has a tether in the middle and it's only, I don't know, like 3 feet long. And mm-hmm. it connects to her harness and it just allows her to, it's portable. So now anywhere I go, so like when I came up here for the summer, I brought that up, I put it in the handler house. It's like the house that all the trainers and stuff are in with their dogs. And that way she wasn't pestering everybody, but she could still be in the environment because the X pins and stuff she can climb right out of and jump over. So it just gives them this, the freedom to be and to be able to experience the normal house life. But not getting everybody's business. And if dogs want to go say hi to them, like, you know, if that's allowed, they still can, but they can also get away because you know how bad little puppies are. They're pestering and it's like enough. And it also trains that off switch.
Yeah.
So those are all just helpful things.
Real, very good. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. The off switch is important. I mean, I don't like, there are certain things that talk about boundaries. Like there's no crazy play between dogs in my house. I can't do that. That's a boundary.
Agreed. I have little paddocks or turnout areas for my dogs in the back. And I am very, very specific about which dogs can be turned out together or which ones are housed together.
Yeah.
Because otherwise the psycho little fence running black lab could possibly turn the big Dutch shepherd into a making not so smart decisions with his mouth.
Yeah.
And I even, some of the other labs, I've seen some of the other labs, their prey drive kick in as we just spin up to go running. Everybody's arousal level's really high.
And then they pick on one dog and then you have a big problem.
And it's just not a great plan. So some days I end up taking dogs there's 2 sets of runs and some dogs end up going out on leash. Most often it's not the Dutch Shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
He just wants to run really fast. And some of the labs are like, nope, you're the problem. And so, and it's just if I manage you just a little bit and set boundaries that you have to sit and stay here. And I'll tell you those sits and stays and only go when you're released.
Uh-huh.
That's when I work on those because as they can do the sits and stays really nicely when it's low arousal. But like Jens was saying, as soon as it flips into high arousal, we forget all of the things that we know. So we work on those things and high arousal left. So it's amazing to think about how everything's training.
Yeah. And you do, you have to, especially if you have like, for instance, I've got like a little herding breed dog with no teeth. And you do, I set boundaries. I mean, yeah, he likes to, we'll go up and I can play with him and the and Brava and Prize in my bedroom. They all have toys and I can play with each of them individually because I also know like their arousal levels and their kind of their thresholds are where they will go. But it's a matter of being aware of your dog and your dog's tendencies and, you know, how strong those prey drives are. And the fact that, you know, a little herding breed dog, they have certain tendencies and their attitudes are often bigger than their bodies and their capabilities and their, you know, so it's just a matter of keeping everybody safe.
Speaking of safety too, some of the boundaries that I learned was that I had to set different boundaries as my dogs aged. So like my puppies, I had like the radish boundary of I'll let the other dogs visit you, but you can't go visit all of them. And I always felt like it was my responsibility to not let the puppies pester the other dogs because I didn't want them to have to make the corrections and fix everything. That shouldn't be on them. Like they didn't choose to have this little creature come in with these bitey teeth. And so then I think about my senior. So like when Quinn got really old and he was blind,
yeah.
If I wasn't careful, I mean, one of the dogs could run into him. I mean, I had the accident happen of Yukon knocked his teeth out because he had the branch. And when he swung around, it hit Quinn in the face.
Yeah.
I mean, and Quinn didn't see it coming. And it was just those mistakes will happen and we can think and feel so terribly about it.
Yeah.
But it's the things we have to start kind of thinking like five steps ahead all the time.
Yeah.
You know, they can't see anymore. Or they can't hear anymore. And so those are things that we have to be more aware of because I think, I don't know why, but man, when a senior dog gets hurt, there's just...
Oh, you feel horrible.
Soul crushing.
That's nothing worse than that. Nothing worse than that. I mean, I have a situation where Prize bounces like straight up and down. And when she's thinking it's mealtime, I mean, this is where you want to talk about food. Man, she gets pathological. So I have to have boundaries in terms of getting them into the crate room. Her, Y, and Brava eat in there. Powder eats in the living room because it's just a different situation. But I have to just make sure that there's boundaries in terms of getting him in because I'm so afraid that she's going to leap straight up because she leaps up like head level with me, right? Even head level, that she's going to come down on him on accident. And talk about that could be catastrophic injury.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you just have to, especially like those senior dogs. I mean, she's twice as, more, she's about twice the size. So, yeah.
But that's why I also, for myself, I set a boundary of I will never have a tiny dog.
Yeah.
Like I just, that is not something I think that I could ever, oof. I'm too rough and tumble. And I'm too unaware sometimes of my environment. I don't want to, oh my gosh, I just can't imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's not, he's small. He's definitely small.
No, no, I'm not talking about why. I'm just saying in general, that just...
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I couldn't. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's hardy enough. I'd be okay with a Y size.
He thinks he's hardy. I'll put it that way. He thinks he's hardy.
Okay, I've got a tricky one for you. There's a reason that I almost always audit. You know why?
Oh.
Because I don't trust other people's dogs.
Partly some of that.
I said that out loud, didn't I? Sorry, everybody.
You did.
I did.
But I also...
The instructor?
Yeah. Unless I really know that instructor. Because, I mean, I know that I would have to really stand up for my dog. I've seen several situations where the person did not want to hand their leash over to the instructor.
Yeah.
And they just didn't know what else or how else to do it. I mean, they've paid for this person. And then things have happened that they didn't like what happened. And oof, that's a hard one.
I'm thinking, is it hard? Like when you go and you work with a new decoy or something, is that, or do you just kind of audit? You audit ahead of time?
Oh, in general. I mean, it can be any, like obedience. I've been to different obedience seminars, tracking seminars. I mean, it's
okay.
A whole variety. And
yeah,
you know, like you said, the one lady that was Joe Public, but grabbed the dog and grabbed the, you know, the feet. It's, you just don't know what other people are going to do. And if they don't,
that was my front yard.
Oh, that was your friend. Oh, yeah.
That was my front yard. I know. It was just like...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Your front yard, yeah.
Right. Well, and I totally agree with this because some people are like, well, I want to participate with my dog. And I was like, if I'm going someplace new, especially that is outside of my comfort zone. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if I'm showing up to a brand new... Let's say I was going to an obedience trainer because I might have hives or something. And And I literally am probably, I would love to audit, or I will show up and I will not hand my leash over. Nope. This is my, I will handle my dog.
I've never handed my leash over to anybody. I don't plan to start, but I've never, never done it.
But that also takes, it takes two things. It takes a handler who is willing to advocate for their dog, and it takes an instructor who will not put undue pressure onto that handler for not over handing over their leash.
I've seen it so many seminars. I've seen it and it's been rough.
Wow.
And I think that that's one of the unique places where we come from. I know me and Stacy from the detection dog world, there isn't, you don't, or you ask, can I need to feel this? Can I ask you, can I handle your dog? But a lot of the times you don't even do that because it's the other person and their dog doing a thing as a team.
I think as a clinician, I don't think I've ever asked that. I mean, actually, as a clinician, I don't even pet other people's dogs unless I feel like the dog's actually asking for it.
Typically, I don't either.
And then I get people like, sometimes like the dog comes up and I tell the people like, look, I'm not interacting with your dog because I'm not sure your dog really wants it. And I'm just trying to be respectful of your dog. Like, and sometimes people get like, you're not petting my dog, you know, and they get like offended. And I'm like, respecting your dog.
Well, it's been really interesting because Crystal, and I think one of the things that's come out of both of our mouths a lot this year, because what happens at a clinic or a seminar is typically the person gets their dog, they walk up to you, you as instructor, then start having a conversation with them, and the dog is left to their own devices.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Give your dog a job.
Right.
I know. Do you put them in
right.
Yeah. You're set.
Yeah. One of the things that's really started happening is if they'll come up and if somebody's looking at us and we're having a conversation, I'm like, we're both like, give your dog a job. And that's just part of the general conversation that happens. And so then they have the conversation with their dog about, well, you're supposed to be doing this. And then we end up having the whole conversation, which is back to setting boundaries. Why don't you have the conversation with the instructor before you go get your dog?
Before you get your dog. Yeah. And when you have a dog like Brava, you ensure that that happens because I have a demand barker.
Right.
Somehow I probably made a mistake at the beginning of her training and I haven't put my finger on it yet, but she's a demand barker and I haven't been able to fix it. So if I go somewhere with her, then I always have that conversation, like an agility seminar. I have the conversation ahead of time. I'm like, now I'm going to get my dog out.
Right.
I just, yeah, because I'm like, she will bark and I don't want to deal with it. It stresses me out.
Right. Well, and it stresses us all out. And I don't like demand barkers either.
So I will say that I end up having to handle other people's dogs a lot in what I do because of play and because of decoy work.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, you do.
And so pretty much every time that someone is working with me, I'm interacting with their dog. And I take that very seriously. And I try to communicate the very best that I can as to what my plan is. But I also deviate from that plan quite a bit because in the moment, the dog shows something different. And so I try to communicate that as well to the person with the dog, you know, the handler, the trainer, whoever it may be. It's a lot of trust you're putting into somebody when you hand your leash over.
Well, and I'm thinking about from your perspective, there can be safety things because you do have to deal with these dogs and you don't know the dog. You don't know the triggers. You don't know the history. You don't know the...
Usually it's the people. The people don't give me the full story.
Exactly.
Because I've had a few live bites because people have said something and then that's not exactly how it was. And then they've said later, yeah, they've bit a couple people. That would have been helpful to know in advance. And so those are questions that I try to ask.
Yeah.
So that kind of goes back to boundaries with people, but
yeah,
it can get kind of tricky. So I want to put it out there that if you see something with someone that you don't quite jive with, it is okay to not hand your leash over. Especially, I mean, I know it's rough. You've paid all that money and you've driven all that way and you've stayed in hotels and it's okay. But that's also why I think auditing is so powerful. I learned so much from auditing, and that's just a boundary that I set because I'm like, I want to know that I can trust the person. If I've seen work with dogs before, of
course, when I do play, I'm like, here, Crystal, play with my dog.
I know, like Miskatonic.
You're amazing. Play with my dog.
I do that all the time.
I think about Miskatonic. It was just one dog after another. It was like, here's the next dog. Here's and I'm like, okay, here we go. You know, but you do. You start to
like a conveyor belt of dogs to play with.
But you know what? If that had been somebody else out there, and I would have had the opportunity, I would have definitely wanted to watch 4, 5, 6 dogs before I would have even said, okay, I see what you're about. Now I feel comfortable with you.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, but you're new.
Yeah. I mean, Crystal. So
Crystal. We're just like, here, take my dog. Can I take another one? I got another one in the van. You want to get that one too?
Yes, please.
Yeah. And then you have a dog who's like, yeah, you're chopped liver. I want to go to play with Crystal. Leave me alone. Right. Because I do have this issue. Yeah. So I literally just think of people who do end up in places. And, you know, and I've been, somebody's like, can you help me fix an out?
Mm-hmm.
And so I typically now try and coach them through it.
Yeah.
So that I don't have to insert myself into it, because there's
a learning history with the person though, and you can get it much faster than what they can. And then once you can show them how to do it, and then you can show the human and the dog, then you can also pair the word with it and you can make it faster and kind of streamline the whole process.
Yeah.
But it's tricky.
Agreed.
But out, there's already conflict there. And if you don't know the dog.
And that's kind of what I end up doing a lot, is teaching a lot of outs.
Yeah. It's easy to teach outs.
I kind of end up going one after another.
Half an hour later, you're still holding onto the toy.
Only on the really persistent ones, if there's no other options. So there's usually other options.
Oh my God. Yeah.
You know, I was thinking of another boundary. I hope I'm not switching the subject too much.
No. Go for it. Cool.
Senior citizens. So I have several friends that are senior citizens, and I wish they would set stronger boundaries, because I worry about them all the time. And it's something that I've been trying really hard to figure out how to help them through, because they don't see the problems until it happens, and then it's too late.
Do you mean seniors that own dogs? Is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
And a lot of mine, you know, like they have German Shepherds, they have Dobermans, you know, like they have big, powerful dogs, and it's a rough one. And it's just a place that I'm trying to kind of come into, because, and then when people will say, you know, I think I'm going to get another dog, there's also that question mark where it's like, oh, they already have like a ton of dogs that you see that could be getting more attention or more care sometimes.
Yeah.
And then trying to set the boundaries for someone else's dog, like, oof, that's tricky. I mean, there's no good answers to any of the things I'm bringing up, but they're just hitting my head right now.
No, there's no good answers. There's no.
We just have to take personal responsibility. You know, it's our time, it's our money, our energy, but man, oh, I wish that there was just some way of helping people see sometimes.
I know.
Especially when it's people you love, you know?
Yes.
I will say one of the things for boundaries that I set is every one of my dogs has to have a really strong collar give.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's my go-to behavior for everything. I think usually called collar grab. I think people are kind of switching to collar give now, but mine looks like my hand goes out so that it's kind of like you're going to shake somebody's hand.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say collar, then I want my dog to sprint to me and shove their collar into my hand.
Yeah.
And they just love that game. It is like the most fun game in the world. It's rewarded more than any besides like recalls and such too. But that, to me, that's one of them that I think is like a boundary kind of thing that I have, that's something that everybody has to have. Do you guys have something like that?
It's going out a door. That is my 100%.
Your thresholds.
That is, I mean, I remember, oh my gosh, a story time, right? So Bravo was young and I still had Judd, and I was camping, and I was, I think, camping on a river somewhere in Colorado, and it was spring and the water was rushing and the banks were high, meaning like steep. And I went to get him out of the trailer, and she was very young. She busted through the door, did know how to swim at that point, but I had him on leash and I see her and she's not responding at all. I'm like, oh my gosh. And meanwhile, I'm trying to get him back in the trailer and he's like, what? I'm like, get in the trailer, right? And they go running. I'm yelling her name. She sees the river and she's like, duck,
timing.
Right?
Oh, no.
Runs, launches into a, it's a fast moving river at that point. When she hit the water, luckily she was upstream of me. And luckily she knew she was in trouble because when I reached, I had to lay on my belly, reach over my arm over the riverbank. And she swam. She was a good swimmer. She swam to me and I had to quick grab her collar and pull her out. And that was the moment I'm like, this can never happen again.
Yeah.
And at that moment, that door became sacred.
Yeah.
And going outdoors became sacred.
And thankfully, nothing terrible happened. Like there was no...
Oh, I know. Thank goodness. Right. Like she's all right. And like, thank goodness. And it was one of those, like, I could have learned a really horrible lesson there. And luckily she was fine and stuff like that. She got out. She's like, that was fun.
Can we go again?
I'm like, you're wet. Get in the train. You know? Yeah. And I was like, my heart was pounding and everything. But, you know, I was scary. And it was just one of those things where I never had dogs that, I mean, she was a pushy young dog. And I never had dogs that, you know, that would push up on you like that. And well, you know, now I know. And I'm telling you everything. Every dog, I can have the door there and they're on their just, the cue is just Brava. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, that word just means only this dog, you all have to stay back.
Yeah.
So it is on a verbal that only one dog is allowed, even on leash. I have a leash on it and it's just Brava or something. And everybody else stays back like, okay, it's not my turn. And I practice releases and stays and stuff. So
Robin, what do you have?
But yeah, one for me.
I think probably one of the biggest things that I have is I would call it a recall, but it's not even really recall. It's more like there's the emergency recall. And then there is the, I don't pull it out very often unless it's a, oh my God, that's going to be bad. But it's the equivalent of a, but it sounds really scary. Like mama's going to come crawl. Basically come across. Yeah.
we got the visual.
I was waiting, man. I was excited for that. I'm like, huh? Crawling where?
Yeah, you know, we get three in a...
Yeah, I'm going to come off the top rope with an elbow and I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
And so...
That's a better visual, yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. And so it turns out that I can actually, because I don't use it very often, the dogs are like, oh... Okay, mom really means no. Yeah, oh, mom really, yeah. Yeah, that's an oh crap factor.
Yeah.
And so most of the rest of the time, you know, my corrections are like a nope.
Mm-hmm.
And they like, okay, that means come back in to reset, especially while we're training.
Yep.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
I know this is totally random. We talked about it earlier. My brain bounced back to it. But earlier we talked about like when our dogs are greeting other people and how we don't necessarily want them to.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned it on a previous one too, about having the little like trading cards.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think when you guys come up for, or when you're here for distraction camp, we should make those for all of our dogs.
Trading cards?
Yeah. So like when someone comes over and they're like, hey, can I pet your dog? And you're uh-huh. like, no, but here's their trading card. And it's really cool because especially for kids, they love them.
Yeah.
But you give it to them. And like on one side, it has like the dog's picture, their name. On the back side, it has like their information. And
I'll be like, I'm sorry, this is not a dog. This is a kangaroo.
Exactly. It just has like some funny stuff, like maybe their favorite toys or like, you know, this is what they like to do, or this is their job, or it's just kind of a fun way to kind of show people that here, put your hands on this instead of my dog.
Yeah.
And so that way for, especially people that are non-confrontational, not that any of us are by any means, but it's just kind of a nice little like, here's this. And it kind of surprises people too, because they're like, why am I holding a thing?
Have your people call my people.
Yeah. But it's just another, you know, like kind of little fun thing you can do. It's just as a boundary setting thing.
His Instagram handle is.
You guys, we're about at the end of our time. What are some takeaways? Who wants to go first? Anything you want to add extra or things that's kind of like, huh?
I would just say it's kind of my takeaway is that boundaries are not really optional. If you really want to have really protect your dog and protect your training and protect your sanity, they're not optional, but you need to determine what they are and you've got to be consistent.
Robin, you or me?
I think that as dog people, setting boundaries and telling people is no is very hard. or just people in general, let's put it that way. People in general, often we are brought up to be in a people-pleasing culture and everybody must like you. And saying no on behalf of our dogs can make you very unpopular with strangers.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a clue. I don't care what strangers think about the relationship that I have with my dog because I need to make sure that my dog is safe. And I'm sorry, Joe Public is usually stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So probably going to get hate mail over that one, but send it to me. That's not Stacy and Crystal. It's perfectly fine.
Oh no, you can send it to me too.
No, I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm like, right on with you.
Let me give everybody the absolute permission. If you can't say no to strangers about petting your dog or putting your dog in an uncomfortable situation, this is a great time for you to start practicing, because every time somebody asks you permission to pet your dog, that is an opportunity for you to say no and practice saying no.
And you can always pull the fungus card.
you could pull the fungus card. Right. So
I think it's clearing up.
Yeah. I think that is absolutely important, that this whole thing, and I hope it's getting better. My dog doesn't need dog friends.
Mm-mm.
My dog doesn't need to play with people. I don't take my dogs to a dog park. All of this other stuff. I just know. And those are hardcore boundaries. I mean, Crystal's going to be here for almost 2 months. Stacy's showing up in 2 weeks. Our dogs will never play together.
Next week.
And we'll be here for 2 weeks.
Exactly.
Our dogs will never play with each other.
No.
And every single one of us is perfectly okay with that. So it's absolutely setting boundaries for our dogs. And because my primary goal is that my dogs are always going to be safe, and I want other people's dogs to be safe too. Wow, that was like a soapbox. Sorry.
Yeah, it was a good one though.
Yeah. Step up, let's go. I like it. Make it tall, make it bigger. I think my biggest moment when I was thinking about this topic was when I thought about the opposite of boundary. I thought that it was a lack of freedom initially, because I was thinking, okay, a boundary, I think like a prison wall, like it's a something that's holding me in. It's not giving me freedom. And it really twisted my brain and tickled it a little bit when I thought, you know what? Actually, boundaries are giving me and my dogs a lot more freedom. And so that was something that it really, really stuck with me when I was thinking about this. I also was thinking, you know, you can't do your job well. You can't life as a dog well if you don't know what you're supposed to be doing. So when you give the clarity, that's when you feel better. You feel better, your dog feels better. And that consistency is also part of that. And that's what I want. I don't want frustration. I want to feel good about my situation. And I think too, and I wonder this, maybe I'm adding something new here. I wonder if people that have a lower threshold for like frustration, if they have more obedient dogs, like if they get frustrated really fast and easier, I wonder if their dogs are more well-mannered because they won't tolerate as much stuff.
Or they get frustrated because their dogs are not well-mannered?
See, I don't know. I kind of wonder if they won't tolerate it. So they do something about it. So like with me, I think I don't get frustrated too easily for a lot of stuff. And so I think sometimes that allows more stuff to kind of slide by. So I don't know. It's just something I was kind of like, but it's always based on your kind of feeling, your priorities for sure. You know, what is important to you? And if sports are important to you, I think we have to set a lot more boundaries. We have to be a lot more consistent. And I think too, boundaries for me mean safety. I always want my dog to feel safe. And if I have expectations and boundaries set in, I think that that's going to be the foundation for everything moving forward. So I don't know. And I want to know the last one. What did Nancy call it? The Montessori thing, the environment. I already forget what it was called.
Structured.
You know what I was talking about though.
I know exactly what you were talking about.
Prepared environment.
The Montessori
environment.
Prepared environment.
Yes, absolutely.
I love that. So that's mine. That's the things that stuck out for me.
Well, thanks everybody for joining us today for this discussion on boundaries. There's probably 5 other different aspects of boundaries, including turning off your text messages while doing a podcast. Because it's Prime Day and my stepdaughter is sending me her list.
I wonder what was happening. You were checking out a lot. I'm like, what's happening here?
Yes. So and we're coming down on off of Prime Day. So she's like, order this. She's a school, first year being a school teacher. So I'm like, absolutely, I will help you out.
Aww.
I'm very proud of her. So thanks everybody for joining us. If you have ideas on boundaries that you have for your dogs, please share those with us on the social media posts. And we look forward to seeing all of those and all of your great ideas. For now, go train.
Canine Detection Collaborative.
We appreciate the time you spend with us. If you liked this episode, not only should you follow us so you don't miss the next one, but please also rate and review us in your favorite podcast app. For info on collaborating with us, go to caninedetectioncollaborative.com. That's K9detectioncollaborative.com, where you can find our socials and pick up our latest monthly freebie. Join us again to talk training in the next episode.